This is Surviving the Music Industry.
That sounds sick.
I didn't think about how that sounded.
All right, hey folks, here we are. Here's the thing, and we're doing the thing. And I keep doing the thing every week, and you circle back to the thing. And the thing is SMI. Thanks, folks, for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Eloise Alterman at the very front end of hanging out. And this was a deep, dark time in my headspace. But hey, folks, I mean, is this kind of where we're at right now? Everybody kind of feeling that pain? Hope everybody's doing okay out there in 2020, Rona land. You're doing the things that you love. You're going through the things that you hate, but you find something that you love. I hope you can just get through it for whatever that means. I'm Brandon. I'm the host of this thing. In case this is your rough intro to the situation, this is it, everybody. If you're brand new to this thing, what it is not that music insidey BS that's out there in the interwebs of the podcast world. I hate that shit. It bothers me so. I'm poking my eye out so much that something like insider tips and tricks things like even exists, because it's all bullshit. We all should know that this is bullshit. I think you would love this podcast if you're a music super freak, because it's just rad creatives and even some insider industry people just kind of nerding out on some shit, talking about their life and even some stuff that they know a little extra about, for whatever that's worth. And then, obviously, you get to hear me complain a little bit. I got a joke or two here or there. There's a moral and a lesson to a story somewhere. But this is the thing, everybody. So thanks for tuning in. I mean, we're on our fifth year. It's insane to be thinking about that. And we're still trying to chug along for what that's worth. American Songwriter saw the validity and the things that we're doing here. And so, yeah, we partnered up with them. We're on their podcast network, hanging out with some good other peeps. So you guys go check out American Songwriter. Go check out all their shows that they kind of have going on. Some good friends. But you guys ever want to stay in touch? If you seem to have a common spirit, if birds of a feather flock and are miserable together, this is your show, everybody. Keep in touch with me at Unofficial Brandon on Instagram and TikTok, if that's still a thing. We never know. I don't know. And of course, there's always at SMI Podcast on the other stuff, I guess, if you're 35 and older. And then let's see, what else is there? Oh, of course, the website, smipodcast.com. We got tons of other episodes and links and everything that you need to know. So go there as you're listening to this episode so you can even check up on Eloise and all our past episodes. One thing that I feel like some people need to know about me that may not even know, I've toured for like 20 years and I'm only 35. I'm a young buck. I started touring when I was like 15, 16-ish and pretty much kind of full time. Played guitar for most of that time. And probably about 4 years ago, I had my heart broken. It was just a cruel bitch called the music industry. The podcast has been around for like 5 years, all right? So this thing was up and running. And you'd think by year one, all the rad people I've talked to have learned a few things, but it didn't, all right? I was coming off of a salary gig, and I was starting to reach out to people of like, hey, this thing is ending. They're like, what can I do? And there was nothing. And I really felt like a lot of people turned their back. I really felt like the industry that I loved for like the past 20 years, like, I don't know, it was a crushing moment. And like, it was a very identity bruising situation. I don't know, for I guess the past 3 to 4 years, I just stopped playing guitar. And only few people will understand this idea that I just didn't want to touch it anymore. I mean, I was just felt too scarred to even do it. I've been playing since I was like 15 or 16, people. Like, and it's kind of a tough thing to talk about, because I wrapped my identity around the playing guitar thing. Like, everybody knew that Brandon played guitar and played with bands and did stuff with bands and wrote music and did the thing. And then suddenly it just stopped. It was just because my heart was broken. I didn't want to return to something that was just going to keep leaving scars on my heart. So why would anybody want to keep doing that? And it wasn't here till recently that I kind of just wanted just to play again. And through that realization that my identity isn't wrapped up in this music thing anymore, it's kind of moved on to something else. Call it dadhood. Call it doing this, talking to rad people. But then I just kind of realized, now I have a hobby. The more music people you kind of realize and you talk to, you realize they don't have hobbies because the hobby that they were doing is now their career. And it becomes everything. It just becomes overwhelmingly the thing that they're doing. And now they're making money from it. It's a super weird thing for the gen pop. Maybe to really understand that. But here recently, I've plugged up an amp, just plugged in the guitar, and I love it. I mean, I went from studying classical guitar and even pursuing a graduate school for classical guitar to not even want to listen to any kind of guitar music or just even touch anything with strings. And just here recently, I don't know what it was. It was just kind of a siren just calling in the background of, hey, you actually used to be pretty good. Why don't you just, why don't you come play with me? And I don't know what that is. And I never had a hobby. And I feel like I kind of have a hobby now. It's kind of playing guitar, which is kind of nice. I'm not doing it for money anymore. And I almost don't want to anymore. It was a lot of pressure. It was a lot of things. And I just don't want my heart broken because I love music. I love the people in music. And that's why I'm still even kind of doing this. And I guess if there's any kind of like learning thing you can do from this, I don't know. You got to analyze your worth, but not in your self-worth. I mean, you have to kind of wrestle with your identity and what you wrap that up in. And then what if it's taken away? There's been so many times in conversations where I've had these rad talks and people have their identity stripped away. And it's just a shell shock rock moment for the next like 4 years. I just went through that. I've been through that. And I can now happily say I'm on the other side. I'm a better person for not wrapping my identity to this thing. And so it's a self-discovery road of what that means for you. But I don't know. I just hope good vibes for everybody. You kind of figure that out. And that just makes you a better human being. And I think when you become a better human being, that becomes contagious where there's better human beings and we need more better human beings. That's an understatement, right? Yeah. One of those good humans I got to know was through this thing, Eloise Alterman. Never met her before. Songwriter, never stood in the same room. I probably don't deserve to. And I felt a kindred spirit. I feel like the more that I do this, that I start feeling more kindred spirits just around this landscape, to feel the same way I do. Definitely, Eloise and I would be like birds of a feather and we flock together. Because listening to the Other Side EP, it's out. You can go listen to it now. It's been out for a bit. That there are a lot of themes, like from fear to danger, like unreciprocated love. We go through it in the course of conversation, and these are things that I constantly feel and things I even write about too. So I really felt really connected to her music and also the production and the vibe of it. I mean, it's all in the right place, right time. She's that big yellow dog, a little insider if you're familiar with Meghan Trainor, Maren Morris, they're over there at that publishing company. So Carla Wallace and all those people, they know what's kind of going on. They know what's happening. So Eloise is over there. She's part of that team. Daniel Tashin as well. So lots of good stuff within the boiling pot of Big Yellow Dog. Eloise Alterman is part of that crew. She writes songs as well. She's doing the artist thing. So we get to find out how she was discovered and the kind of a little bit of the genesis of Eloise. I mean, we had so many things in common. It's a little freaky, people. The more that we talked in the course of conversation, I hope you guys really get drawn into it. I think everything that you want to know about Eloise, you can go to her website, eloisesound.com, and go figure out about. I mean, you don't have to read it. You can listen to it, I guess. I mean, you don't have to go anywhere else. But eventually, I'm sure there's going to be tour dates when she does things, when everything's going to be popping. But you want to know some updates, eloisesound.com. Go give her a follow, Eloise Alterman on Instagram. And is that it? No, it's not. Of course, go listen to the Other Side EP. It's out. It's been out, people. So go listen to it. You won't be disappointed. It's really, really good. I enjoyed my conversation with Eloise. So here we are. We're just getting to know each other.
Hey, this is Eloise.
Eloise, what's up?
Nothing. How about you?
Well, you know.
Just getting through.
I feel like just from that sound, like you feel my pain.
Yeah.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I think you're solid. We just moved, and so I'm back at like the old place because it's the only place we have internet.
Oh, I got it right now.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. I should take a picture and send it to you because it's almost like what a squatter would look like trying to like write beats or something. Like it's just, I just have like paneling everywhere trying to like cut this echo out. And I don't know.
I mean, good for doing what you can.
It's balling on a budget. I mean, that's really what it is right now.
That's my
struggle bus. I don't know. I hope you can hear me okay again, because that's like messing with my head. Because it's just kind of like, it's not the thing like I'm used to, and then shit just kind of like flips. I want to flip a table right now. That's how I'm feeling. So this is what you're walking into.
The next morning hostility.
But I feel like you can be just as sad as me, or mad, or even like angry sometimes as me, like listening to some of your music. So I'm excited to kind of really get into it.
Cool.
Yeah. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like you're a sad person, happy person?
Yeah, I think I have highs and lows, but typically I actually gravitate. I'm more comfortable in sad positions.
Right. It's kind of comfy, like in a depression blanket. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's easy.
Yeah, 100%. It's way too much work to be happy.
Yeah, you have to put in the effort. And like, I can do it. It's just sometimes I also am more creative when I'm feeling more, and I'm always feeling the most. So, you know.
Oh, 100%. I think there's way more emotion and things to dive into, like with sad people or angry people. And plus, I mean, that's why they fucking say misery loves company. Everybody is miserable.
Well, yeah. And artists, especially, like, I read something once when I was younger that was like the most, like, the saddest people are always artists, or like people, even like Van Gogh and stuff, cut off his ear, but he made beautiful art. It's like the people who can feel the most can make this like incredible art, and people, you know, who just live their life happy and on the surface, like I was always so jealous of, you know. At the same time, it's like, that's why, you know, creative people typically have problems with depression or anxiety, or, you know, finding happiness or whatever it is, because that's where they get all their creativity from.
I agree. But it's not the most popular person in the room.
No, it's usually artists, musicians, like all types of people. They're always kind of weird too, which I like.
Yeah.
It's all kind of weird.
I mean, that's me to a T. I mean, I like the party situation, but I'm more comfortable being the gargoyle in the corner. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's funny.
But how long have you been in Nashville?
4 years, 4.5 years maybe. I would have just graduated college if I went.
Ah, fuck that. Fuck college. Yeah. You know
not
what I'm saying?
Not for me.
Did you know it wasn't for you? I mean, you knew automatically?
I was such a follower in high school. Like, I really thought I was going to go to, you know, one of the state schools or something because my friends were doing. And I remember somewhere halfway through my senior year, I never wanted to go to college, but I also never wanted to leave home. But somewhere halfway through my senior year, I was like, I want a whole new life, you know? The only thing I was confident in was my music at the time. And so I was like, this is just like what I feel like I need to do right now. And I don't know where it came from, because I was a very introverted and like homebody, you know? So all of a sudden I was like, Mom and Dad, I'm moving to Nashville. And they're just like, all right. So that's what I did.
It was that easy? Boom?
Yeah.
They didn't try to, like, pressure
college? Well, I mean, we had a talk, but, you know, they're very supportive.
You had the talk.
Yeah, just like, what's the plan?
Yeah, I bet it was a dad. I feel like it's a dad thing of, like, you know, you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah, and my mom talked to my dad about it, and, you know, my dad didn't go to college, so he was supportive. My mom went to art school, so.
Okay. Where are you from? I don't even know that.
I'm from Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, good Detroit or bad Detroit?
Good Detroit. I mean, it was bad when I was growing up there. All cities have their shit, but Detroit definitely is still on its comeback, but I support Detroit 100%, so.
It's on the mend.
Yeah.
I remember like touring through Detroit, like when it was rad. Like there was like a rad point, like for music in Detroit, mm-hmm. like for me, like in the early 2000s. And then obviously, you know, shit hit the fan. And yeah, now I just kind of feel like all Detroit is kind of bad. But there's people that are from it that just love Detroit. Like they just see something else.
Yeah, like my dad will never leave Detroit, but his work isn't even there anymore. But he just loves Detroit. Some people are just diehard Detroit fans.
Yeah, yeah. What'd your dad do?
He's in the car industry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. What's he do in the car stuff?
He makes the engine blocks for American cars. So he's always done that. The logistics of it, but I just know that it's the engine block and he makes the parts and sells them to the car industry.
Yeah. Dad does something. He goes to work and he comes back.
Yeah.
And mom and kids are good.
Yeah.
What does mom do?
She's an interior designer. And she owns a clothing store and a furniture store. So.
Oh, so she's the creative one, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So she went to like an art college or something.
Yeah, she went to a few different schools. She kind of just did her thing. She went to school for business and then she went for art. And then she got into interior design later and she's really good at it. So it's fun to watch her.
Okay. Yeah. You an only kid?
No, I have, I'm the oldest and I have 3 siblings under me.
The oldest. So like all the pressure and responsibility on you kind of thing. Well, I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think my parents learned how to parent on me more than like the youngest has it off so easy. I remember just like, you know, first high school parties and staying out late and stuff. They're like, well, what do we do?
Yeah.
With her. So it was more strict for me, but.
Right, right. I'm the baby. So I 100% agree. I mean, I got it off so easy. I didn't have curfew. I mean, it was legit. But my sisters, oh, I mean, it was like on lockdown all the time.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was more of like your childhood. Like, why is she out? Do we need to keep an eye on her? She's high again.
Yeah, she's fucked up. Yeah. Like, what do we do?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, was that really like that? I mean, like at the home perspective, it was just kind of like, well, Eloise, she's in trouble again. What are we going to do?
Actually, I was such a rule follower. I wish I could say I was like the cool one that broke the rules and stayed out late, but I technically didn't have a curfew either, but I'd still come home like way before I would ever need to be. I don't know. I was kind of a loser, I guess, but my brothers definitely were the problematic child.
Oh, they're the middle ones, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's always the middle ones. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and my sister were pretty chill.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, did you have like pressure growing up? I mean, you were a rule follower, but I did that kind of like from pressure, mom and dad.
Yeah. I mean, most of my parents are really hard workers. And I think that was like the only pressure I ever got was to just really work hard at everything. They didn't care, you know, if I messed up or if I was like, if I got a bad grade or something, as long as like they saw me working my ass off all the time. And I always did that with music, but I wasn't always super interested in school. I just was super anxious that I was going to do poorly. So I would do it just to check it off my list. But they always only cared, like they really held work ethic pretty high for the high standard thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So especially in Detroit, I mean, I feel like even your mom being an interior designer, but your dad being in the automotive industry, I mean, shit hit the fan at some point, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, it was always so crazy around our house. I mean, we're all 2 years apart, so we were all pretty much toddlers at the same time. And my mom had her hands full, and my dad wasn't home a lot because he was working. And so I don't know how my mom did not crack any of the pressure. But, yeah, I mean, around the recession, you know, shit started to hit the fan.
Yeah.
But we're a really close family, too, so we were really lucky that it all worked out. But, you know, it's a roller coaster.
Yeah, but, I mean, how old were you like in the recession of when Detroit kind of went down?
I think it was, I was in sixth grade. I was the only one of my, like of my siblings that knew what was going on.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you're aware at that point of like, oh, okay. Dad is like overworking. Maybe doesn't have a job when mom is double like, working.
We're talking about some serious changes. Yeah. My siblings didn't really understand, but I remember like we stopped going out to eat and stuff like that, like everyone was doing, you know, and it was just even little things like that and Christmases and whatever, like I could tell my parents were, you know, really stressed out just as everyone was. Things were just really different then, you know.
Right Yeah. Even sixth grade when that shit kind of goes down too, because I feel like sixth grade is awkward for everybody, but then
oh my gosh.
But then, like when you're like poor or like hustling, like in sixth grade, mm-hmm. I feel like that's a mind fuck.
Yeah, it's just like what's going on, and your parents don't want you to know, you know, or to be worried, I guess. And yeah. There was never a point where like we were going to be on the street. Like we have family and stuff. Obviously everyone was just going through it. It was such a shift all of a sudden, like so quickly, you know, and how families were doing. Proud of my parents for keeping it together. Cause I don't think I fully knew, you know, what they were dealing with.
Yeah. Right. Right. They still married.
Yeah, they're still married. But my dad had he had built his whole business in America. And then when the recession happened, like everyone had to shut down like American businesses. So he had to shut his down. Everything got shut down and he moved it to Mexico and Canada.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that's a stressful like family dynamic. Okay. Even you. And
he was like, I don't want to go to Mexico.
Right. I mean, nobody wants to. Yeah. I mean, did he go at some point?
Well, he had to start building a new company there. So he was gone for like 3 months at a time, but it ended up all working out. But at the time he was, you know, so bummed because he had built that company from the ground up and it was in America. Now he's in Mexico in a, you know, little condo somewhere trying to build up a new company while his kids are growing up, and it was hard.
Yeah, and it was a condo in Mexico, you know. I guess depending where it's at, it was just kind of like
wasn't a nice area of Mexico.
Yeah,
it wasn't like the beach.
It wasn't like a white shiplap Chip and Joanna condo, like
no, it was like military like 100%. Surrounding area.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So can I take a stab? Is this about the time like you started discovering music?
No, I mean, I'd always had music. I loved karaoke as a kid. I was horrible. I got a new karaoke machine every Christmas and I would just run that poor thing like till it died and just like blasting Hillary Duff karaoke. And my parents were like, how do we tell her she needs to sound?
Can we hide the microphone or?
Yeah. Can we like just put it outside? Oh, I don't know how to deal with this, 100%. But I did it all day long. My mom's like, look. And I was like, Mom, I want to be a singer. And she's like, well, if you're going to be a singer, you're going to have to learn how to play an instrument because you can't sing karaoke your whole life. So then I started teaching myself piano, and then I got a guitar teacher. Once I got better at that, then I started teaching myself because I was over it. And then she's like, well, you know, you can't just sing covers your whole life. But because I started doing like YouTube covers and whatever. And so then I started writing probably around my freshman year of high school. And then they were bad. They were like 5 minutes long, 6 minutes. He's like, you're not Led Zeppelin. Like, chill out.
Right, right, right. Do you remember some of those song titles then?
Oh, they were just like a sentence. You know, they were like horrible. Or they were like Starlight. And like, I look back and cringe. And they were all about me longing for some guy who probably didn't even know I existed. They were always about that. Or about, you know, I'm different than everyone else or something just so stupid. But
isn't it funny? Like Fiona Apple can like write a sentence like as a title and it's cool. But then like when you do it as a kid.
But like when you're a freshman with bangs and like definitely overweight, kind of weird. It's like,
No. You were overweight as in high school?
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty much an overweight kid.
I was too.
Yeah. And like looking back, I think it was a good thing for me because, you know, you deal with like being really insecure and like kind of looking at yourself different at a young age, like already being really self-aware of not like looking good and at like age of 9, you know, which is pretty young for that. There was one, I think I was like 16 where I had gotten pretty heavy and I just had decided that I didn't want that life for myself anymore. And that's when it really kicked in, you know, like the working out and eating. And it took me like 2 years to lose the weight, but a part of me is happy that I had that experience because it makes me look at people differently.
Yeah,
you know?
It does. Yeah.
It definitely put a lot of stress on me, like around appearance, but I've been working on that and just, I'm really happy that I wasn't like, you know, people who like peak by the time they're 12.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And then, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a former fatty too. And I get that 100%. Do you still have this in your brain? Like every time you look in the mirror, you still see that person?
Yeah. Every single time. And I always feel bad for her, you know, cause like, I don't know. It's hard. I think anyone who deals with feeling bad about themselves in any way, it's like, you can feel bad about how you look or like your personality or not being funny or like people not liking you. It's hard. And especially growing up, being sensitive and stuff, I just really wanted to be like everybody else. And music is actually what helped me not like write it to like get it, like to put it in someone's face. It was more to like just get it off of my chest and like let it go type of thing. So music was really helpful for me for that.
I guess it all kind of happened all about this time, like freshman year, high school, lost weight, and then diving more into music, kind of writing your own stuff.
Yeah, it gave me more confidence, I think, to put, like, you know, videos on YouTube out and stuff. People were, you know, when I first started doing them, I was pretty heavy, and people would comment, you know, mean stuff, and I'm like, what are they talking about? But
you just couldn't see it? Like, it was a thing of, like, well, I don't get it.
I think I was in major denial. Mm. Like, I did not want to admit to myself that I was very overweight. So I think, you know, to me, it was more just denial because I didn't want to put in the work.
Mm. Like, how overweight?
I was about 190 pounds.
Okay.
I was 16. So I was pretty big. I mean, puberty and all that, whatever. But I ate a lot. So that's pretty much why. It wasn't like, oh, gross burger, waiting for that. It was literally just that I ate for five.
So. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, was there more behind that? Because for me, I don't think there was anything emotional. Like, it wasn't emotional eating. I just liked the fucking eat. It was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I loved food. I had loved food since I was young. Like, my mom said I would, like, if I saw candy, I'd start jumping up and down and my eyes would, like, roll back in my head. I had, like, a really, really bad relationship with food, and it was emotional eating for me. Like, I would get anxious and stressed out really easily, and I would start eating and my heart rate would slow. And so it was like, oh man, this is how, when I'm emotional, I'm going to cope with it. Mm. And it kind of just became a really bad habit. And then just overeating every time I was sad, and it caught up with me. You know, I was a big kid.
That's a stressful time. Like, freshman, I mean, we talk about sixth grade, but fuck, going into high school, you know what I'm saying? Like, and you're the YouTube generation. You know what I mean? Like, you're posting stuff on YouTube, trying to do the thing, and you're reading the comments, which that's like YouTube 101. Don't read the comments.
But, yeah, like a bunch of weirdos.
Oh, 110%. But did the YouTube thing like work for you?
Yeah, it was. I did a cover of "Let Her Go" by Passenger, and this was when I had found it on like the iTunes top 100 for singer songwriter. It was like literally number 99. I think it came out that day, and I loved it. And I did a cover of it, and then I think like that song got so popular, but there was no other videos out of it besides mine.
Oh,
and I really think that's why it got like a million views. And
whoa.
I was like, what is happening? Yeah. And for me, I was like a freshman. I'm 15. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm famous. This is crazy. Yeah. But I mean,
You that's why you didn't go to college. You were making a YouTuber.
So no, I didn't get any money. I didn't know that was a thing then.
Oh, about what year was this like in the YouTube thing for you?
Oh, man. Maybe 2012 or 13.
Oh, okay. I mean, it was out. So it was like, I mean, it was hard to get discovered on YouTube at that point, but you were smart.
Yeah. So then every month I put out a new cover for my fans. And, you know, everyone was from Germany or something, which was cool. I get like Facebook messages. I thought I was super cool. That was like my thing.
Mm.
But it wasn't that cool.
Yeah.
They're gone now, so you can't find them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've known people from Michigan. They're a different breed. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's like people from Texas, and it's like, I'm from Texas, and it's just like, oh, okay, I know that Texas person. And there's obviously like Florida man.
Yeah.
But then like, Michigan is like kind of a thing for me, which I feel like I understand. But I think about this time, all your friends are going to college, right? And then you start making this decision. And I feel like there would have been pressure like from your friends, because I feel like Michigan State or like Michigan U, like that was the thing everybody was going to do.
Yeah.
And join the sorority.
Oh, yeah. Sororities. I remember I already decided I was not going to college. And I had gotten into colleges too. Like, I got into University of Southern California and Berklee School of Music. And those were the two I was deciding between. Everyone was putting up their, like, where they got in on the board and, like, the lunchroom. And I hadn't told any of my friends yet that I wasn't going to college. And I was working an internship, like, half the day, like, every single day. And I was missing PE class. And I had talked to the dean of students about it, and she said it was fine. She was like, just don't let the other students know because they don't know yet, but they've all graduated. Like, they have enough credit. And I was like, cool, so I won't tell anyone.
Oh, yeah,
but then
right.
all my, like, some of my friends went and told on me for not showing up to PE and said that I needed to get in trouble. And so I get called into the office, not because I'm in trouble, but because they want to know why, you know, my friends are really sad. I'm not going to be there for field day. And they feel like I'm really distant. And I'm like, I have to tell all of them I'm about to not go to college. And they're more worried about me missing field day or PE class. Like, what is going on? So that day, I literally walked down to the auditorium and I, you know, they were just being bitchy. I went to an all-girls school. So
I had
great friends there, but there just were a few that were being so bitchy. And I was so scared to move here and stuff. And I look at them and I'm like, seriously, you told on me or whatever? And they're like, yeah, you should get in trouble. And I was just like, I'm leaving. And this was like April. And I walked out and I never went back to school.
Whoa, that's crazy.
And I was like, oh no, I just lost like all my friends and now I'm about to move to like a new city and not know anyone. And they were all, you know, saying, don't you know if you don't go to college, like you won't become anything? Like, does she think she should move to Nashville? Really? Like, what is she doing? Like, it was crazy. Like, and my parents' friends were like sitting them down and talking to them about it and saying like, she needs to go to college. Like, it was really, especially in the area I grew up, it was like, you go to college.
Right, right, right. You know? I understand that. I don't understand the dynamic, obviously, of an all-girls school, but I'm almost just kind of imagining like it was just mean girls like on steroids.
It was like you didn't realize someone was being mean to you until you walked away, and then you're just like, wait, fuck that, excuse me?
Right. Yeah, but even that pressure too, I mean, I feel like one, you're doing this, right? Like you're doing the music thing, so you're already an alien, like you're a freak to begin with.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so, like, that's, I feel like to a normie, to somebody like in the gen pop, it's kind of like, there's something wrong with her and we're worried about her. Is she,
yes.
You know, is she binging? Is she, you know, is she on Adderall? Like, it just starts becoming this thing, you know, but for you.
Always in your business.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I grew up in something like that, too. I mean, and I think that's the. And that's why I feel like I could nail Michigan, because it's kind of like this, the music thing, or like even pursue like a quote unquote dream, is such a foreign thing.
It's just a lot of people aren't doing it.
Yeah, right. Because I mean, how could they? You know what I mean? For most people, it's like they just see the world like in front of them, and that's it. There's nothing beyond the forest.
Yeah, like they go to, you know, their parents went to Michigan or Michigan State, which are both great schools, but then they go and do that. And then they move home and like start a family, and it's like this repeated thing. And like, that's for some people. And like, I don't knock that at all, but I also, it wasn't for me, you know? There wasn't, I mean, a lot of my parents' friends did support it, and my friends who were, I was really close to, did support it. But then there were a lot of people who were like, what is she doing? Like, you know, she's so crazy. And I'm like, I probably am crazy, but like, at least I'm going to try it, you know, and just see how it goes.
Right. So your parents...
College will always be there.
So. Yeah, right. I just hung out with, I don't know if you're familiar with Gretchen Peters, like on the show. And she's just like, you know, I ditched school too, but I think I'm going to go back and like study knitting. Well, it's like, well, yeah, if you can write Independence Day, Martina McBride, you could do whatever the fuck you want.
You could do whatever you want.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. For sure. I feel like your parents would get like the blunt of some shit too, especially in this dynamic.
Poor things. But my dad's like, I didn't go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he would get offended by it, kind of, people are like, she won't become anything. Like, you know that. And he's like, well, I didn't go, you know. I'm really lucky that I had super supportive parents, but they also watched me like do the same thing my entire life. Like, I taught music lessons. I did anything I could to be around music. And it was the only thing I really did work very hard at. And they're like, yeah, she'll be unhappy forever if she doesn't try this. So.
Yeah. So we're talking, you know, this is probably like 4 or 5 years ago, right? Since you've been in Nashville for 4?
Yeah. I was 17 or 18. So
yeah.
I'm right. 23 now.
Classic story. Pack up the car, pack up the truck, move to Nashville. I mean, was it that
very
easy
large
for you?
Truck. I have a lot of shit.
I fucking hate moving. I mean, we just went through it, obviously. And you're giving me anxiety right now, just even thinking about it. And we're done moving. Oh, it's worse.
But it's just like, you never feel settled.
Yeah.
for a long time.
I feel like as us, right? You know, as a creative, it's kind of like, oh, there's always something else.
Always.
Yeah, that's there's something beautiful about that, but then there's also like something like very demanding and dark about it. You know, because to me, it's like, oh, there's something on the great beyond. But then it's like, fuck, I got to pack up a truck. Fuck this.
Yeah. I don't know if I can do it.
All right. So you move to town with all this mean girl dynamic, and then parents are into it. They're okay. They give you the blessing. You're already writing songs at this point, right?
Yeah.
You're already doing the thing. What kind of stuff were you even into?
Honestly, it was such a mix. I loved, you know, classic rock, but I also really loved Billy Joel and Elton John, Joni Mitchell. I was so into singer-songwriter, too, at the time, type of music. I wasn't really into pop music, which is crazy. I actually really listened to a lot of country then, too, but I wasn't, you know, country. I just was in Nashville, and I was like, gotta listen to some country, and I got into it for a while, but it took me a really long time to kind of find my sound because I have so many different influences, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like that's your generation. Like, do you even know, like, do you subscribe to an idea of a genre?
No, it's like, there's so many different types of genres within a genre. You know, it's like, if you say you like pop music, that could be anything, you know?
Right. Do you like trip pop? Do you like, you know, like rock pop? Like, yeah.
So I just like anything with great lyrics and a great melody, you know.
Even like some of those people, like Billy Joel, I mean, and Elton John, you know, they have bops, right? You know, they have like those songs that are bops. But Joni Mitchell, if you throw her in the mix, it's kind of like, oh man, there's some moody shit in here.
Case of You is one of my favorites. River.
Yeah. Okay. What kind of, like, are you a record person or do you just like songs?
I like songs. I mean, I've honestly been one that's like, that record is my record. You know, it's like, I find songs that I like within all their works, I guess.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I'm like really bad with titles and whatever. It's just like, I know the song when it comes on.
Same way.
Yeah.
Fuck, talking about a title. I that's weird for me because I like records too. I can memorize records, but like, I mean, song specific. I mean, I can't even tell you what I wrote yesterday. So let alone somebody else.
It literally makes my hands sweat. Like when people are like, okay, now what, you know, album or song, because I start second guessing it. And I'm like, you're going to sound like an idiot if you get it wrong. Or whatever. So,
yeah, right. Especially like in this town, you're like in the co-write situation, and like people are spitting out like songs or like the influences. Oh, it should like sound like this, and it's like, I'll be quiet.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh shoot. Well, like I do, but like now I'm like, please don't start doing trivia with this.
Oh right.
This band.
right. Okay. Yeah. You've always liked the moody stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
All right. So you moved to town. And you still have some songs underneath your belt. I assume you don't know anybody in town. Did you know anybody?
I did not know anyone. I knew like this one person who I was moving in with. It ended up not working out. So after 3 months, I moved out. And I was supposed to have like this internship thing lined up. And that just fell through also. So when I got there, I was like, shit.
What'd you
like,
do? Did you just do the Craigslist thing? Like you just found a roommate?
I had met this guy when I had come. I think it was around like, was it CRS? It happened to be the same time I was auditioning for Berkeley. I met him in the lobby, and we ended up living together. It was really weird, but it was short-lived. And, you know, I was really young. I was super naive, and so it was probably annoying to live with me, I'm sure. I just kind of kept to myself, and then it was just not working living in that house. And so I found an apartment. I moved all my stuff out, and then I was like, okay, now you're really alone. Like, you have nothing going for you. You don't have your internship. Like, I'm not in co-writes. I was just writing by myself. I had an electric piano and my guitars and an apartment and literally, like, no friends. And all my friends now were just, summer was over, they're all going to college. And I was like, shit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm like, oh no, my parents are calling me like, what are you doing every morning? I'm like, yeah, grinding.
Right. So, what was your internship? Where was that?
It was supposed to be at some record label. It was all a big lie.
Was it really skeezy? Like, it was just like, it was really scammy?
Yeah, it was, like, yeah, it was like, oh, you have an internship at Warner. I was like, oh, awesome. It didn't.
Those exist. Yes. It's super sleaze. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm exercising empathy right now. Like, you're in a new town. Shit just ain't working out.
No.
Like, whatever the situation with this guy, like, whatever happened there. And then, I mean, did you guys have a relationship or was it just kind of like, oh, I'm
no,
just
it was okay. just, he was supposed to, you know, record my stuff. I slowly just kind of, you know, started figuring out it wasn't a good fit. And it wasn't for me, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
So I peaced out.
And then you're in a new town, you're getting kicked out. Or not kicked out. You're moving out because it's awkward.
I'm
so yeah. So I mean, it's like, and I bet homesick. Were you homesick?
I was, but I didn't want to go back ever, which is crazy because I was so lonely. Like I don't even know that level of loneliness. Like when you actually don't even have someone to call when you're in this town. Like I couldn't even go get a cup of coffee with someone, or I couldn't even go to a bar to try and meet people because I was 18. So It was like once. And everyone my age was in school, like at Belmont or whatever, and they had their own things. And it's like, I'm just this random person living in this apartment with all these adults, you know? And I was a kid. Like, I was literally a kid in an apartment. I was learning how to do laundry and, like, didn't know you were supposed to take, like, that fuzzy stuff out of the filter. Like, I was literally, like, I'm surprised I'm still alive. Yeah. I was doing that, but...
Lint is flammable.
Yeah. Every single day, I was like, for me, I'm noticing about myself, I really do take every single day just getting through it.
Yeah.
So that's why I said, even with like everything that's going on in the world right now, like I don't get scared about stuff because I really am just present in that day, and I'm like, just get through the day, and then you'll figure out tomorrow. And so that's what I was doing then. And I look back and I'm like, I literally would like go buy picture frames and like put pictures in them. And my job for the day would be like hanging up a picture frame. Like I was doing nothing, but I was writing a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like in this time of loneliness, I mean, that's what it is. Right. And it's a dark hole, right? Especially like, I've experienced homesickness before and it sucks. Like it's a different kind of depression, and I understand like the not leaving part, but then like going to buy picture frames of and putting pictures of other people's family like on your wall, like that's probably not you, but I did.
I'm
that.
Just like, oh, they look so happy.
Yeah. So,
I'm like, I would spend 2 hours at Walmart,
yeah,
just walking around. Do I need new towels? Maybe, yeah. I like was trying to figure out how in the world I was supposed to be an adult when I did not feel like one.
Yeah. Were you depressed at this time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was really sad and lonely and depressing, but I never once, like, couldn't come home, you know? Like, if I had called my mom and said, I can't do this or anything, they would have helped me in a second, but I felt better there than I did when I was living at home and, you know, in school and trying to be something I wasn't, you know?
Right.
But it was really, really lonely. I remember being so lonely, but I had so much time. There was no distractions, you know, like it was kind of like a quarantine. I wrote at night until I was on a weird sleep schedule where I'd, you know, sleep in really late and I'd write all night long. And I, you know, I would try and like co-write with someone, like even if they're like my waiter or something at Pinewood Social. That's how I met one of the first people I started writing with. It's because I was like, hey, I know everyone here does this and this is like the cringiest thing ever, but you want to write? And we did. Yeah. And we did. And we actually got some great stuff. His name's Devin. And he was kind of like my writing buddy.
Wow.
For a lot of my first years here, just like trying to figure stuff out. But I would walk down to Pinewood Social and get mocktails and try and meet people.
I have to say, I've never done that. Like, because it's weird, like, for me to, like, put myself in your shoes and be brave enough to do that too. But I guess, like, out of desperation, it's almost like, well, I got to figure something out because I'm here to do this.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, but you wouldn't trade that time now, like hindsight, right?
Couldn't do it again, for sure. Like, I don't think I could do that again, but I wouldn't trade it now because I'm really happy I stayed. And I don't remember like, I remember feeling really discouraged. And like, then all of a sudden too, I was like, wait, everyone here does this. Like, you are special at home because you play guitar and you wrote music, but everyone here is so good, you know?
Yeah.
And then I was just like, once again, I was like, oh shit. Like, I didn't think about how this would have to be my livelihood, like at all when I moved here.
Right, right, right.
That was the one thing was like the most naive about it, was like, oh, you're going to have to, like, this isn't just like a passion project anymore.
Well, I actually got to show up. I got to get dressed and like bring it. Yeah. When did you meet? I'm assuming you met Carla. I mean, you're published at Big Yellow Dog. Is that who you met?
Yeah. So I met her last summer. I had written some songs that I ended up wanting to record, and I did, and I sent them to her, or my lawyer sent them to her. And I hadn't gotten a response back from anyone. I was just like, I was about to move home. It had been, you know, 4 years, and I was like, okay, now it's time to, like, you know, think about college or something, because you tried, you know. And then Carla's like, I want to meet you or whatever. So I came to her office. She's like, I don't like any of these songs. I don't like the production, but I really like your voice. And I had showed her some like voice memos on my phone. And then she started like, she's like, shut up, shut up. I had no idea. And then she's like, okay, I want to do this. And I was just like, do what? She's like, I want to sign you as an artist.
You got signed off a voice memo? Like, that was
not crazy.
That
I was
is
like,
nuts.
No, you shut up. Are you kidding? And she's like, why aren't you more excited? And I'm like, I literally don't believe you.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. What was the voice memo? I mean, was it just like hook ideas?
It was my song Lady. So, I mean, I had put some reverb on there with my microphone, but other than that, it was stripped down. Like, the other stuff I was showing her had so much shit going on. And she's like, I knew that you had a good voice, but she's like, you know, a lot of people have a good voice, whatever. But she's like, the songs, I couldn't even listen to them because of all the production that was going on. And so I showed her these other two that I didn't cut. And she's like, I love those. And then she brought people in the office and she would turn it up and be like, listen to this. And she was geeking out over them. And I was like, what is going on? She literally told me these stuff. Like, you know, when I first walked in here, like the first stuff, she didn't even really remember. And by the end of it, she's like, I want to sign you. So it was such a cool moment, but I literally was just like, what's going on?
Yeah, right, right, right. Because I feel like we have the same like brain wavelength. Like when good things happen, it's unbelievable. Like it just doesn't make sense.
I was like, what's it? Like, I was like, I just don't believe it until I see it type of thing. And I'm just like, yeah, I've got my hopes up before. Like there's no way this person just listened to it and wants, you know, I'm like, what's the catch? But Carla's amazing, and she has built my confidence so much, even just with releasing music and really being myself with my music too, you know? And, you know, she's never pushed me to be country or anything. Like, she's really just, she's so great with artists. She is exactly doing what, like, exactly what she should be doing,
yeah,
you know?
Right, right. I mean, the track record speaks for itself, you know, from Megan Trainor to Maren Morris. It's kind of like, I mean, There's other people in the office too, but I mean, I think I just know Carla, but it's just kind of like, I mean, she knows what she's doing. You know what I mean? Because not everybody would have signed Megan Trainor at the time. And if they did, they would have pushed her like to do country.
Yeah. She just hears something in artists, but she has to meet you. Like She really just wanted to sit down and meet me. And she's like, you were so quiet and like kind of monotone. And she's like, it was so confusing because your songs were so emotional and honest. And it was kind of like she was talking to a brick wall. But yeah, it ended up working out.
I mean, that's insane, especially the voice memo situation. I mean, these were full songs.
These were full songs, full, like, you know, and I had spent a lot of money on them too, like full, you know, recordings that I had done in a studio. And she's like, I don't like these. I don't like them.
He spent so
much
money.
You have anything that's just you and piano. And it's funny because, like, I had always loved, you know, like, kind of songs that were just, like, piano vocal type of stuff. And she's like, that's where I can hear you. She's like, you need to showcase that, not this. And she can just hear where an artist stands out, you know, and what they're good at and how to, you know, really pay attention to that over a really cool track or a bunch of shit going on in the background.
Yeah, yeah, right. Right. Now, was she your first meet and like only me, or did you meet like other publishers?
I had met with one other publishing company, but I would have just been a writer, not an artist.
Mm. But so that's what you wanted to do. Like that was the factor.
1,000%. Like it hurt to even think about, you know, writing for other people, but I would have done it to, you know, obviously still be working in music, but I was like, man, I hope I don't just get so caught up in writing for other people that I forget, you know, what I really have always wanted to do.
That idea, like, that fascinates me because at least in my brain wavelengths, like me being an artist, like again, or like doing the thing, like shoot me in the head. Like, I don't want to like do the thing ever again. I'm totally cool, like walking in a room and like, let's write a song and I can go home and eat Cheetos in a beanbag chair, like naked and play video games, like the end. But your wavelength, like you said, it's going to be the artist thing and, you know, shoot me in the head if I just got to write, you know, songs I really don't believe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what it, like, even when I've tried writing for other people, I'm like, what are they going through? Like, I need to know exactly because it's hard for me to write if I don't feel it or just understand it, you know?
Mm.
Like, I can't just make up a story that I'm not like sympathizing with or something, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So do you feel like you have to live through the song, at least in your imagination, like before it becomes a thing for you?
Mm. Yeah, even if it hasn't happened to me, like if someone opens up to me, then I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, I know, like this must feel like this or whatever. You must have been questioning this or whatever. Because that's what I, you know, talk to myself about before I write. And I write about, you know, exactly how I felt in a moment. And so it would be hard for me if I didn't have like, you know, a therapy session before to like write for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I know some people like that, you know, they'll spend an hour like just kind of hanging out, you know. I feel like Natalie Hemby is like one of those people. Like, obviously she can like, you know, walk in a room and like just bust a song out in an hour, but like she'll sit down with you and like just talk about life.
That's,
you know what
so
I mean?
Cool.
Like Lori McKenna, I feel like it's the same way. And so
I love that.
It's not abnormal, but it is the thing of like, especially I feel like when you're doing it, it's kind of like, all right, we're here to write a song. Like, like to get to know you, that's too much time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been really cool. Especially, I mean, all my writes so far have been pretty much over Zoom because I had signed and then everything happened.
Boom.
So yeah. I'm just opening up to these poor people like over Zoom.
Yeah. Yeah,
just bleeding out in front of them, and they're like trying to patch me up together by helping me write a song.
Yeah, yeah, you ought to try having like a heart-to-heart conversation over phone. So I mean,
yeah, I'm an open book. So
yeah, well, here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah, okay. I'm getting a sense for you, and I'm glad to kind of get to know you through this thing because going through the EP, the other side, there's some like for me, there's a lot of things I feel like I have thought of, but like I would never be that bold enough like to put it in a song. It was like, for me, like there were like themes of like fear, danger, unreciprocated, like memories and like things that aren't what they seem, but all encapsulates like love, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that. I love that it was just a different view of love, because you know, like when you write a song about love, it's usually like one of five things, but I feel like you had a pretty cool way, especially through this EP, like to kind of go through the emotions of the downside, like the other side of love.
Yeah. And for me, like with that title, one of the songs is called Other Side of the Bridge, which is where it all kind of started, the first one I had written. And also I feel like with songwriting, because a lot of times like you can sound like a victim when you're hurting, you know? And like, that's never my intention. It's just me literally getting it off of my chest and making it real, you know? And then being able to let it go. But the other side for me was like my side of the story, because, you know, with love, there's other people get involved and like you hear about everyone's side, but I'd never really spoken my side. And from the beginning until the middle and every single part of it, that was my side of it, you know? And there's always another side to the story. So
yeah, I mean, we get so wrapped up on hearing one side, you know. We think about Maury Povich. You know, like you only hear one right. side of a crazy story of love and yeah. a paternity test. But it's like, I guess even like in a realistic way, like if you're friends with one person, it's like you only hear that one side and then that's it.
Yeah. And it's probably negative. And then you hate that other person.
Right.
And
right.
I'm sure like this makes it sound like, you know, like I'm always being attacked or something, but that's not what it was. It was really just that this is exactly, all of those songs were exactly how I was feeling when I was feeling it, mm-hmm. you know? And when you're an emotional sensitive person, like shit hurts, you know? And I enjoy writing about that because I think like when something bad happens, I don't feel like I'm on top of the world. And there's a lot of songs, you know, that are like, screw him or like, screw this, I'm strong, I'm whatever. And I never felt strong, you know? And so I really wanted to be honest about that because that's how I feel. And I always was embarrassed of being such a sensitive and soft person and getting hurt easily. But there were things that went on that didn't feel fair to me, or I always felt like I was reaching for someone or something, but I was so honest about it. And like, I look back at the other side when I had started that song, I'm like, you were asking the right question, you know? But at the time I didn't know. It was just exactly what was going on in my life. And it was how I was feeling.
Do you feel like you lived this song, The Other Side?
At the time, I had written that on the floor of my apartment, like the one when I was, I think, 20 or whatever. Wrote on the floor of my apartment. It was actually a really slow song. And then I worked with this girl, Robin, and she had helped me, like, change the tempo and stuff after I had written it. And it had so much more life to it, and it seemed so much more lighthearted, you know, and not like a girl trapped in her apartment, you know, being like taken advantage of by a guy, because that's not what it was. It was just, you know, exactly what was happening. And I was reaching for someone who didn't feel like mine, but I was really honest with being okay with it. And you kind of watch like the self-destruction, you know, that's going on, and like, oh, that's exactly why she ended up, you know, where she is in track 5 or whatever it is, because that's kind of where it started, you know?
The self-destructive behavior and that idea, and to put it in the song, it's hard not to, my personal opinion, it's hard, especially if you write from that dynamic of self-destruction, not to become the bad guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's a tricky thing.
I just wanted, you know, if someone else were to hear it too, to just be like, oh my gosh, I do that too, you know? It's like, I'm such a lover and I choose it over myself a lot. Because it's like that quick, you know, feeling of feeling good when you're with someone, or of having someone like you back or love you. It's like I choose that in the moment instead of, you know, even when I'm fully aware of what's going on.
Yeah, right.
I chose that instead of choosing what would have been like a great choice for myself in the long run, and like avoiding a lot of hurt. But I don't care, because I will always, you know, stand by my choices I make when it comes to love or anything that has to do with my heart, because I also learn a lot about myself, and it's who I am. Like I wish I could say like, I'm the type of girl, it's like, no, I don't, like, I'm not going to take this shit or whatever. But there's a part of me that does it to myself, because I just, you know, I make it what I want it to be. And I did at the time.
Mm, yeah. There's kind of like this West Side Story, Romeo Juliet kind of vibe to that song too. Right. So
yeah.
Do you feel like you're the character in the song, or is it somebody else?
I think it's always me.
Okay.
I don't think I'm, like, there will be a guy, you know, in it, or someone I'm talking about, but it always kind of comes back to what I'm doing, you know, not what you're doing to me, or like, you screwed me over, you did this. It's like, I'm just asking questions. It's more sometimes, I think, too, for the listener to decide whose fault it is, or like, who did what, you know?
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, I think about that, something like along that idea, like on the truth. Because I feel like there, because to me, there's like at least this idea, unreciprocated love. And it's kind of like, well, you know, if I listen to it one time, it's going to be, well, I'm pointing the finger at this person, like they're in the wrong. Now, the second time I listen to it, oh, now it's this person. Like, why are you throwing shit on your face and wondering, why do you have shit on your face? You know?
Right. Why are you doing that to yourself?
Yeah. So, I mean,
you're crazy.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So, I mean, is that even close to the truth? Like, is that kind of the idea of it?
Yeah. When we had written it, we were all kind of talking about, you know, the relationships we had been in, and everyone, like, we had brought up the thing about, you know, not feeling strong or whatever. And I'm like, you know, honestly, for me, like, there's been so many instances in my life when I know shit is really screwed up and like what's going on should not be happening, but I don't have it in me to not have that person because I want to stand some moral ground and be like, no, I'm better than that. Because I don't, and it's, I'm super honest about it, I don't feel better than that sometimes. And that probably has a lot to do with just how I feel about myself, you know? And I think that's kind of obvious in the songs too. It's kind of me, even with like nostalgia and what I thought it was, it's me trying to be strong, but not feeling strong, you know? And it's me thinking, oh, I should be, or like, this is what I should be doing, but it's always doing what I want to do. And what I want is another person or to be loved or whatever it is. And whatever comes with that, you know?
Yeah, it's taking risk, right? I feel like all love is a risk. Yeah. Like, no, because I feel like love is, people like put a rainbow on love and then forget about it. But mm-hmm. I think all love is a risk. And so.
Okay. It's work.
I mean, especially.
It's work.
Yeah, it really is. And so like even the thing of nostalgia, the thing that point that like struck out or like at least like popped in my imagination was that to me, it's hard to write a song that is like. Really, I'm trying to pick the best descriptor words, and so I'm just going to spit it out, so don't be offended, that there's like, it's really brainy. It's hard to write a song like to try and encapsulate like something that you're feeling and you're knowing, and sometimes there's like a lot of like words and verbiage to describe this thing, and mm-hmm. I thought nostalgia was a great way. You didn't dumb it down by any means, and it's really clever and brainy to me, and I still get the idea of it, you know? I feel like the idea of nostalgia and the themes, like even in one song, it's not convoluted or confusing, you know? But it's still, like, to me, like a bigger themed arcing thing than just love.
Yeah.
Or the idea of, like, memories that, you know, our memories are not what we are, or what we thought they were. When we look back, they're not controlling us. And so I thought, did you write all the songs just yourself? Or
No. I wrote that one with, his name's Dan Agee. And I remember we were like, I love the word nostalgia. But I was
too.
Like, there's no way we can write this. Like, it's such a weird word.
It's hard
it's
to sing.
It's not easy to sing.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. And I was like, but it needs to happen. And so... we had just been talking because where I was in my life, I was like, am I remembering things like way better than they were? This is when I was kind of in the thick of hurting. And I was like, I don't know, because it's like every time I try and get mad, I get sad. And then I like remember only the good things, you know? And it's like, and I've listened to my friends too. They go through breakups or whatever. And they're like, you know, it's crazy. Cause they break, cause I'm so mad at him because he did this to me and he cheated on me or whatever he did to her. And she's like, but then when I go home and I'm alone and it's over, I trick myself because all I think about is all the good things he did. And it's like, you blind yourself from maybe the reason that it wasn't good for you. Or I like at the time too, I just had wanted to write about something that was really honestly like what people feel when they don't know if they trust themselves in remembering things how they were, you know? And even if it's not about love, it's like, you know, people are like, oh, 2019 was so much better than 2020. Or like, I was so happy then, you know, but it's like, were you, or do you just like, you're always kind of reaching for something that isn't the present, you know, or I'm going to be so happy this day, but I'm not, it's just, it has nothing to do, I don't know, with just always remembering the past better than it was, I think.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, there's been like a couple highlights, like lyrically for me, because I feel like you have a talent of, and few people can do this. To me, or at least in my imagination, like you can listen along and it's kind of like, okay, I'm getting an imagination of what this thing is. But then usually there's like one line that just sets the entire story. When I think about what I thought it was, like there's a line to me that it just flipped. It flipped the song for me. Like it was the, I'm going to try and remember, like it, I only got half a heart from you because she, like he loved somebody else too. And so.
Yeah.
It was something like that. I botched it. I botched my own lyrics, so don't feel bad.
No, you're good. Okay. I know. I know. The pre-chorus.
Yeah, that pre-chorus. sets up that song for me of like, oh, then this is just more than, you know, it was just love and it's not what I remembered. It's like, oh, it's more complicated than that because this dude or this partner had another side piece going on. But that character was dealing with it for 3 years. You know, it's that other, it's still that situation of, well, I got shit on my face. Why do I have shit on my face?
So funny.
Yeah. But I mean, I think you have a cool way of like just setting a line. Like the line will change or flip the song like in a heartbeat. And that's one of those songs like stuck out to me that did that.
That's awesome. And I think the pre-chorus set that up in a way too, because the chorus is exactly what I was saying to myself. It wasn't really like talking to him. It was like, because it's kind of like the way it's quick, you know, it's like, don't say you love me, you don't, like all the stuff that was going through my head. The song's about an exact moment, you know, the whole thing really is. And so I think, you know, I like the second verse too, when it's like, I was thinking of you, you were thinking of her, but who was thinking of me? I like that line because I feel like it kind of just encompasses all, I don't have to go into detail, you know?
Right, right. Because the song still keeps that mystery, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I love the production on this too. Like, were you really hands-on on the production side?
This was my first write with Dan, and I had walked in with him and I'd played him a few things I liked, and him and I have a lot of musical interests that are similar, and a lot of the like people we like, no one has ever heard of. And so it was cool to just like kind of geek out about different artists and different bands or whatever, and we listened through some stuff, and then he just had those piano chords that start it repeating, and we just sat there I had so many notes about, you know, everything that I had been feeling, and it took me a second to get the verse down, you know. But I really just wrote about like the instant, and I started with, you know, the raining outside and then exactly what happened after, and then the whole thing literally just like flowed. And the production on that, he killed it. I know that I wanted to start out feeling like a ballad, but then go somewhere a little bit.
Right,
the
second
verse gets kind of more intense, I guess, from the first one.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he did a really good job with that. I think it's awesome. I love how the chorus moves. Still, it doesn't feel like a piano ballad.
Yeah, right, right. I think that's the beauty. Like, to me, like it kind of had a Lana Del Rey vibe. Like to it,
yes,
like
yes,
post, yes. Like Born to Die for her, you know, like it's almost like, you know, for her, it's kind of like, you know, snorting cocaine in a bathroom with a high compressed piano in the background. You know what I mean? Like it was, to me, that's what it felt like. And
I love that.
I'm 100% sold on a compressed piano. I mean, I don't know what it is like for me, but I don't know. That just, to me, that just sets a tone and a pace for like what something is going to be. But even like other production stuff, like I heard, like even in Nostalgia, it kind of had like a Fix You, like Coldplay, like organ situation mixed with like the Tears for Fears, like arpeggio, like in the background.
I
thought it was just gnarly. I mean, because it was
He killed it with that one.
Yeah. I love the production in Nostalgia.
Awesome. Yeah, I love it too. I remember when I was like, we got to make this song work. And it took us two writes just because I was literally trying to, like, it was hard for me to like grasp what Nostalgia meant and what it would mean for this song.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we kept getting stuck because I was like, well, I guess it could also mean this, you know? And then,
right, right.
Like our brains would go, you know, take another turn. And I was like, I think the more simple we keep it, you know, the easier it will be for people to also connect to, and it can still mean a lot.
Yeah, that's cool too, because like when you think about nostalgia, it's not, you know, like in your mind, the idea of nostalgia, like whatever that idea is that is nostalgic, like it's not complicated. It's like an instance, right?
Right. Yes.
So even the production just mimics that. Yeah. I think you guys like really thought this thing out. I mean, was there a lot of pre-planning like for this?
You know, usually before, right now, like I had a write with him actually today, and I'll send him some stuff I'm liking and some things I'm feeling, and then he'll be like, got it. And we just really get each other when it comes to that stuff. So it's been really cool to just not have to search for something. Like, he really is great at what he does.
That's cool. Well, good for you. I'm so happy you got somebody that works
great
with you.
I know, it's fun finding someone. Yes, it's great.
I'm jealous of you. Like, I'm a little jaded, to be honest. So there you go.
No.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. You'll find your person.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's kind of like, I don't know if I want to find a person. Because then it's just like, oh, then that's extra work. I got to keep that person, you know?
You got to keep him around. I'm interested.
No way. Let him go. Free as a bird.
Yeah.
Yeah, Forrest Gump style. Make a bird fly far, far away. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. Bye.
So get on out of here. Go get that record right now. Go listen to it. The Other Side EP is out. Eloise Alterman is an amazing songwriter. Obviously, she's that big yellow dog. She is doing the thing. And honestly, when you listen to this record, you'll realize, holy shit, she could do it. This is the thing. Eloise Alterman, go listen to it. The Other Side EP, again, it is out. Go to EloiseSound.com for everything about Eloise and go give her a follow at Eloise Alterman. And let's see, what about us? What's going on? Not too much. We have episodes out every Tuesday. So go to your podcast platform and hit that beautiful subscribe button. And we'll pop up on your little computer pocket every Tuesday. And every once in a while, we have a nice little surprise throughout the week. I think I'm going to start throwing some in there. So be on the lookout, subscribe. And if something just kind of touched your little heartstrings in this episode, all I ever say is that you just share it with a friend. Share it on social media. See if somebody can relate to it. And maybe they're not alone in their own headspace. Give me a follow at Unofficial Brandon on Instagram and TikTok, at SMI Podcast, Twitter, Facebook, and go visit our website, smipodcast.com, for literally everything else. Hope you beautiful people are taking care of yourself, other people out there in humanity. But you know what? Love yourself. That's the most important thing. All right, see you guys next week for an all-new episode. Take care. Happy surviving.